Welcome to episode 329 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment Technology. This includes audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
Alrighty, we're back. I'm tired. You're grumpy. This should be an interesting show.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
All right, as usual, we're going to kick off the show with some listener feedback. All of this was emailed to us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. You want to take this first one from Alan?
Absolutely. Alan writes us, and you may remember Alan was the person having problems with his record never flag or whatever the thing is called. And he says, please thank Jose for writing in to say that his problem with NBC had cleared up eventually. My problem still exists for the NBC HD channel, but the S2 channel is recording fine. That's because why would you protect SD? With respect to calling Verizon support, I'm very familiar with how the script goes down with first level supported Verizon. With that in mind, since I'm remote until next month and knowing I could not troubleshoot the problem easily, I did not call. If the problem persists, I'll call when I get back home. I did post on the Verizon Fios TV forum, and several other folks on that thread had called in, so hopefully it is covered. Thank you very much for bringing it up on the show. And also from Alan, we had a little bit more from him. He says, I don't think you all mentioned in the Plex NAS talk that Drobo has a Plex Media Server app on the 5N. I have a 5N, but have not tried since I've been running a Plex server long before I bought the 5N. Just thought I would bring up the option. And we'll have a link to that information in our show notes. You know, it's funny he brings this up because just this weekend, I turned on my Plex server on my Drobo 5N. Now, I haven't done anything with it yet, but you may remember last week, I talked about how, okay, well, if we're going to get Plex on a TiVo, then I should probably think about doing this. And, you know, I want to think about doing it. So I turned on my Plex server. Now I actually have to get some stuff into it.
All right. You know, when Alan first emailed us about the Drobo supporting Plex as an app, I thought, doesn't every NAS support Plex as an app? I mean, it's almost like the standard thing nowadays. It's one of those things where we definitely can't cover all of them because it seems like every NAS out there supports Plex. But Drobos are pretty popular, and I didn't realize that was the Drobo you had, Richard. So that's all the more fitting.
It is. So at some point in time, we'll probably be talking about this in my entertainment center.
And just to prove a point, Rennie in the chat says, Plex is now on the Western Digital Maya Cloud too. So see, it's everywhere. You can't escape Plex, even if you're trying. All right, we also received a few emails from Joe, and you know, we'll kind of also use this as our first main topic of the night. So last week was kind of a continuation of rough news for Media Center users, because early on in the week, the Netflix plugin for Media Center just kind of stopped working entirely. We're not just talking about the search functionality here. You couldn't watch anything at all, period. It just didn't work. And you know, there were a lot of people upset about it. Maybe no one more upset about it than Joe. But fortunately for him and for everybody else, it got fixed somehow. So I don't know the root cause. I don't know if it was something Microsoft did or if it was something Netflix did. But it got fixed, and it got fixed pretty darn quickly compared to other problems we've seen happen with both Netflix and with Media Center. So
Netflix search.
Well, right, which is still broken.
And broken.
Probably never going to get fixed. But he also wanted to write in to talk a little bit more about his Netflix addiction and some problems it's causing him. So he wanted to talk more about other options he would have for watching Netflix if it just never works again inside of Windows Media Center. He says, I could buy a Roku, but I have an old tube-style boat anchor of a TV without an HDMI input. It's one of the last tube versions made around 2004 or 2005, I think. It was a high-end model when it was made, and it's either 32 or 36 inches and is extremely heavy. It will play HD in 720p, but it only has component in and a DVI connector. I connect my home theater PC to the DVI input, and I'm not sure if a Roku 3 would even work with this TV. I've seen cables that have HDMI on one end and component on the other, but the few that I have seen do not have good reviews and are not true HD component. There are complaints that there are 5 analog RCA connectors are worthless for HD. Plus, I don't want to spend $100 on a Roku if the problem can be solved on the home theater PC. So I came up with an idea. That DVI port, you can probably
This is Josh talking right now.
Yeah, sorry. So this is me with a possible solution for Joe here. That DVI port can probably be used with, you know, a simple like $3 DVI to HDMI converter. You could then stick like a $15 HDMI hub off of that thing and plug your HTPC and something like a Roku stick or a Roku 3 into the HDMI hub. I think that would work. There's another option though, and that is replace your 11-year-old TV.
Well,
chances are it'll come with a Netflix app. And I don't honestly mean that. If the TV works and it's what you want, then great. And I'm not going to tell someone to go spend $1,000 on a new TV as a serious answer to a problem of watching Netflix.
So I'd like to think that for Netflix, this problem is resolved since the app itself is running now. But this brings up an interesting problem that I think we're starting to see more and more of as cloud streaming devices start to depend solely on HDMI. And we are seeing that more and more. Now, I suspect that there are still some devices that have component output, but I really don't know much about them because this is not an issue for me. And nowadays, I think that this is, you know, you're in the time when, for the most part, everybody's assuming that you have HDMI. I'd be a little bit concerned about the solution that you're proposing, Josh, because one of the things that I've learned is that DVI is not DVI necessarily, right? There are different flavors of DVI, and I've had problems with different connector converters trying to plug one thing into another, hoping that it's going to actually work with my TV. And find that, oh, well, that's the one that works with a monitor, but not a TV. And so, you know, I don't know what the necessary differences are. I just know that sometimes I could plug a converter into one device. Sometimes I couldn't.
Yeah, I don't have tons of experience with it, but I'm not anymore. But I used to use DVI out to HDMI in for my home theater PC, and I've done a couple of other setups with DVI to HDMI without really any issues. So yeah, there's the potential for problems, but it's also a pretty cheap thing to try. So if you really don't want to give up that TV, which I don't blame you, that TV might look great for what it is. So you know, you're not going to have motion issues and stuff like that. That if you went out and bought a $200 LCD. You probably wouldn't really be increasing your video quality by doing that. So hopefully some of those answers can lead you to a better solution. Or, well, frankly, hopefully just Media Center continues to work for you because that's what you're already using. All right, so he's still using Media Center. We're still using Media Center. But friend of the show and latest author at the DMZ, Mike Fauché, is no longer using Windows Media Center, at least when it comes to watching his ripped movie library. So Mike wrote an article called Moving a Movie Library from Media Center to Plex this week. And in it, he talked about how what he had done before for his collection of over 250 Blu-rays is he'd ripped all of them to a folder structure and was using My Movies, like you, Richard, to watch all of them on Media Center. And I believe he's got some extenders around the house too. He may just only be using home theater PCs at most of those TVs, but it was working okay. But with Total Media Theater from ArcSoft being no longer supported, which is what was the actual video playback software that he was using within Media Center, since that's gone now, which we reported last September, he figured the writing was on the wall. It's time to move to something else. And he'd already been using Plex for watching his movie library on mobile devices, because Plex handles the mobile situation pretty well, and it's on everything. You know, we talk about that a lot with Plex. They've got apps on iOS and Android and Windows Phone and lots of streaming sticks and things like that. So he thought, let's just jump all into Plex. But the problem with Plex is that Plex doesn't support folder structures. So the next thing that he needed to do was convert those 250 Blu-rays from folder structure to something that Plex would support, all without losing the quality.
That's so correct.
Yeah, exactly. Because you don't want to just compress it down into like some 3 gig MP4 file and have it look like garbage when you're watching it on your giant TV. You know, that's fine if you're watching it on your phone on the train or something like that, but not so great on a 65-inch TV.
Exactly.
So what Mike ended up doing was he used another program that we're pretty familiar with here called Make MKV, and it was able to take his Blu-ray folder structure rips and just convert them into single MKV files. They have chapters, but they don't have previews and extras and all of the other things. This is exactly how I rip my movies, by the way. All I care about is the actual movie. And that process goes really fast because he's not doing any compression and the content is already on the hard drive. So there's not even the time that it would take to copy from the disk to the hard drive. So he was able to convert these into MKV files in just a few minutes per movie. So he set up a process where he was converting 6 of these at a time, which the screenshot of him having all of these Make MKV windows running at the same time, I found kind of hilarious.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Over a few days, he was able to convert all of his giant movie collection over to MKVs, and it's working out great for him. You know, it's a solution that makes a lot of sense for him, because he listed all of the types of devices he has in his house. He has 2 Xbox Ones, 3 Rokus, 2 home theater PCs, 3 iPads, 4 iPhones, 3 Android tablets, and 3 laptops. Plex runs on all of those. And with this format that he's ripped everything into, it all works beautifully. You know, on the mobile devices, Plex can transcode down to lower res and lower bit rates. For your TVs, you know, it can stay nice and big. On the home theater PCs, he's using the actual Plex home theater application, which isn't going to transcode anything, which is wonderful. So he's loving this. You know, it was a little bit of work, obviously, to convert everything, but it's working out great for him, and he really didn't have anything negative at all to say about Plex.
Yeah, that's very cool. Now, one of the things that he doesn't talk about that much, from what I can tell in this post, is the 10-foot experience. Is it that he's just using existing streaming devices, or is he not using the 10-foot playback experience? I'm not entirely sure.
Well, on the home theater PCs, there's that Plex Home Theater app is a 10-foot experience application that's designed to run on PCs.
Okay. I didn't see that he has all these different screen prints, which I love. Like, there's screen captures from Android and iOS and from the config environment itself. But I didn't notice anything here for what that 10-foot selection experience is like. And, you know, frankly, that's the thing that I think is most important, because I know that I have a lot of tolerance for Plex or any other program when it comes to something that I'm using on a device that only I'm using. When it's going to be on the TV in the family room, then it has to be crazy easy to use.
Yeah. And as you get into setting up Plex in your environment, I'll be curious to hear what your thoughts are on that Plex Home Theater application, to see if it's good enough for you or if there's other issues with it.
Yep.
But it's working out for Mike.
Very cool. And I am so excited that he provided this post for us too. And I'm hoping that we see some more great stuff from Mike. He's such a source of great information for the show and for us as a colleague in this space. So thank you very much, Mike.
Indeed. All right. Well, we've also been following the Kickstarter campaign from the guys at Silicon Dust with their HD Home Run DVR. That campaign, I believe it ends like today or tomorrow.
Yeah. So if you're listening live, it's going to be ending within the next 24 hours, 20 hours to go.
That's
by the
right.
time this episode airs, it's over, and they're well over $300,000 in support now.
Right. So we reported a couple of weeks ago when they hit their original $100,000 goal. Then they started going after these stretch goals. The first stretch goal was for support for Kodi and iOS. They blew past that pretty quickly. And then they set up a poll for, they wanted their users to tell them what should be the next stretch goal. And Xbox One was an option. There were a few other options, but none of them could beat out Plex. Big surprise, Plex again. So the second stretch goal was Plex, and of course, they got that too. That goal was at 250,000, and they're at 323,000 right now. So we're going to be seeing HD Home Run DVR on Windows, Mac, Android, Kodi, and Plex. And iOS eventually also. So that's all great news. The thing that I keep seeing, though, is a lot of concerns and questions from the community about protected content and playback of shows that are copy protected with a cable card tuner. Silicon Dust has a cable card tuner. They said HD Home Run DVR is going to support copy protected shows, but it is going to be somewhat dependent on what you're using for playback. It'll record them all, but will your device be able to play them back is the big question. And it really comes down to what it is that you're trying to play it on. So if it's a Windows PC or an Android app, they're saying it's going to work, or even a Mac client. But when you start getting into all of these other possible playback options, things start to get a little less clear, and they're saying that at launch, Kodi and Plex aren't going to support protected content. And frankly, I don't know when it will, because that's, you know, that's a big deal. Like, yeah, it needs to be able to support DTCP IP, which is essentially like protected content over DLNA. That's how Silicon Dust does this in the apps that they already have. And
right.
It's just not supported on some things. So,
like iOS devices.
Like iOS devices. But nobody uses those, so it's not a big deal. But
it's such a good thing.
So, like, I think everyone got really excited. Oh, if it's on Plex, it'll work on everything because Plex works on everything. But it probably won't. It probably won't work on most of the things that Plex runs on. And I think that's kind of disappointing. You know, I had a brief Twitter conversation with a Twitter follower named Kenneth this morning, and he was talking about how he was so disappointed that Xbox One didn't win that poll, because he thought that it seemed far more likely that they'd be able to get protected content support in an Xbox One app than in Plex. So I'm still excited about this. I need the protected playback support, but they're going to have it in some way or another. But my big concern, especially as a podcaster and a blogger who needs to be able to cover this and explain this to people, is how are we and how is Silicon Dust going to easily be able to explain to users, if you're a cable card customer and everything's protected, well, here's all you have to do to be able to watch the things that you want to watch, because it's so dependent on what you're watching or what you're using to watch it on that you're going to be a lot more limited by with your device for playback than what you normally would be for other types of content. And I wouldn't want to have to be the one to tell that story.
And it's way more complicated than that, because it's not just what device you're running it on, but who your provider is and which content they protect, right? I mean, the real issue is which of the channels that you have fall under the protected umbrella and which don't. And that's going to vary from provider to provider. This is going to be very confusing for users, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard enough explaining this to people who are interested in using Media Center, and it's going to be more complicated for HD Homer and DVR. Either way, like I said, we're excited for Silicon Dust. We can't wait to get our hands on HD Homer and DVR and see how well this works. We're just nervous about how they're going to handle those situations. So we'll keep an eye on that and keep you all updated.
Indeed. And in fact, just yesterday, because I knew that I was going to contribute, but I didn't know at what level and I really needed to think through it. Just yesterday, I finally made my contribution toward this. And I'm not really wanting to get any hardware or any special access to anything, but I did want to just generally help fund it. So I kicked in with one of the earlier levels that they have in their contribution, but I'm so excited to see this happening.
Absolutely. Well, Richard, you and I woke up this morning to an unusual tweet sent to us.
Yeah, quite unusual, actually. Someone had sent us a link to a German site that, from what I can tell, is a community site promoting saving Media Center. Save Windows Media Center. Actually, what I love about this is that the exact URL is MediaCenterDon'tDie.com.
Don't you die on me, Media Center.
So this is, you know, this is, from what I can tell, an avid users or an avid group's effort to try and rally the troops, rally the community in both English and German. They have pages that support their interests and promote their news in English and German. And they're really trying to kind of spin up the community to put some pressure, I guess, on Microsoft to do something that will help ensure that Media Center's life lives on, that this is not going to die in the short term, that there's a long-term solution, whether it ends up being that Media Center itself gets somehow productized and sold to a third party, or if it is maybe open sourced or what have you. There are a bunch of different options, and they have a post where they're asking people to contribute in comments. They have, interestingly, they have what they're calling supporters, and this is a translation, so I don't know if they mean sponsors, but there are some pretty compelling applications that are built upon the Media Center platform or built to work seamlessly with Media Center that are purportedly on board with this, and that's pretty cool too. So if this is something that you're interested in contributing to and getting your voice heard, I would encourage you to go to Media Center Don't Die, no apostrophe, because you can't do that in a URL, MediaCenterDon'tDie.com, and take a look through what they're posting there.
All right. So I kind of have conflicting feelings on this site. Like, I love the enthusiasm. I love the fact that they're going to all of this effort to try and save it. But I don't think anything is going to help at this point. And they talk about all of the possible solutions that could come from enough people expressing the support for Media Center to Microsoft. So solution one, maybe they'll open source Microsoft. Sorry, there is zero chance of that happening. They're not going to open source Media Center. It's not going to happen. Option two, sell Media Center based on a license fee to a commercial project. So like sell it to another company to sell it. That's an interesting idea.
And it's not the first time that anybody's brought that up, right? I think we've talked about that before. Why don't they, you know, why doesn't someone like Seton potentially work with Microsoft to see, okay, could we take this over for you? And, you know, that's an entire hypothetical.
Right. That's an interesting idea. Everyone keeps bringing up Seton. I don't think it's Seton. But that's an interesting idea. Still probably not going to happen. Option C is that Microsoft starts working on it again. And they even recognize themselves that this is the least likely option here.
That's the first one that I'm willing to concede on. Yeah, that is not going to happen.
Right. And then solution D in their list is to just sell Windows Media Center as an app in the Windows Store, which is kind of essentially what they did in Windows 8. And if they've said they're not going to do it for 10, they're probably just not going to do it for Windows 10. So I don't know. It's unfortunate. I don't think they're going to continue any more work on this. But hey, you've at least got like 5 or 6 more years of using it on Windows 7 and Windows 8. So
here's the reason that I like this site. I think this site potentially could provide a home and a voice for people to collaborate who are interested in continuing the productive use of Media Center. You know, we have colleagues like Mark Terberg and others that we've talked to and had on the show who have been actively supporting Media Center for years. And what I don't want to see happen is I don't want everybody that has ever developed for Media Center, Charlie Owen, to say, goodbye, I'm never going to have anything to do with you again. I'm not supporting my products. I don't care. You're dead. Move on to something else.
Right. Well, and our listeners know our position on this. We don't view Media Center as dead. It's not dead until the guide data stops working, which we don't think is going to happen for a long, long time. All right. So let's move on to some gaming news. Not a lot of big news here. We figured we'd just run through the latest releases and some updates on Games with Gold and Deals with Gold. So a couple of releases on the Xbox One this week. By far, the biggest release of the week, maybe the biggest release of the year, Farming Simulator 15.
What?
I'm just kidding. I mean, it is a real game. It seems like a more interesting game than Goat Simulator, which released somewhat recently. But no, I'm just kidding. That's not the biggest release of the week. Witcher 3 Wild Hunt is the biggest release of the week and perhaps the biggest one of the year so far. Huge, huge, hugely popular game. It's not one that I'm probably going to check out, but it's getting great reviews. It looks awesome if you're into that type of action RPG type game, and it's available now. The other big release of the week is the second expansion to Destiny is now available if you're into playing Destiny. On the Games with Gold front, nothing's changed on the Xbox One, but again, on the Xbox 360 side, they like to do this whole split up between the first half of the month and the second half of the month. So now, for the rest of May, if you're on a 360, you can grab F1 2013 for free. That's Formula One racing game. Check that out. And then Deals with Gold, this is, of course, when they just discount some games for the week. Some big ones here too. Dragon Age Inquisition. This game just came out last fall. This game won Game of the Year awards. A really, really good fantasy role-playing game. You can get just the regular version for $30 or the deluxe edition, which I think probably just has some DLC included, for only $35. That's half off. You know, if you haven't played Dragon Age and you've been wanting to, this seems like a perfect time to buy it. The other deal that I thought was interesting was Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes. This game is typically a $20 game, but now it's down to $10, which I think is a great price for it. It's basically an extended demo for the upcoming Metal Gear Solid game that's coming out later this year. If you're into Metal Gear Solid, it's cool. Check it out for $10. You can't really go wrong for that price.
Cool. Very cool. So let's talk about some mobile stuff, Josh. And I know that I'm going to give a little bit of spoiler here, but I bought a new Lumia.
What?
And I'm going to use this as a testing device, but how am I going to get Windows 10 on it? Do we know that yet?
Well, I think we do. So, well, sure, we do, basically. You're going to get it as an update. We don't really know officially. Microsoft hasn't officially said that stuff yet. But it sounds like we're going to get Windows 10 on our phones the same way that we've received Windows 8.1 on our Windows 8.0 phones. It sounds like it's still going to go through the same process that we've been using in the past, where it does require some input from the carrier and maybe the manufacturer. But the interesting news this week was that Microsoft started to confuse people, not that they ever do that with their crazy long blog post, but started to confuse some people by saying that they were essentially going to try to take over the update process on Windows 10 devices going forward. So once you have a Windows 10 phone, that you'll get your updates from them. And the idea being you'll get them way faster. You won't be stuck in situations. At least this is where people started to jump to. That, you know, that they make arguments like, look at what Verizon did to the Lumia Icon customers.
Yeah.
The Icon came out in February. Windows Phone 8.1 became available in April. And users didn't get it on their icons until, I think, January. I think a little late to the game there, Verizon.
Just a bit.
So
with everyone, no value added, right? That's the thing. They're just it's all about putting their flavor on it without actually adding value.
Well, you know, that's typically the attitude that I would take, but it sounds like with the Icon specifically, they did a bunch of extra testing, and that part of the reason it took so long was that they were finding issues and getting those issues fixed. So it might have actually been a good thing in the end for Lumia Icon users that it did take a little bit longer, because they might have gotten a more stable release because of it. But so when Microsoft says we're going to be in charge of the update process, they immediately think, oh, they're going to do for Windows Phone what Apple does with iPhones, where they control the whole process and the carriers are just going to have to deal with it. But that is not what they said. It is,
which is unfortunate, because that's what I want.
It's what everybody wants. Except for the carriers. I mean, maybe it's not what everybody wants, because the problem is that there are a zillion different Windows phones out there. Heck, there's a zillion Lumias out there. I'm sure you just bought a phone, and I bet you're not even sure what the number is on the phone. But, and when you have that many phones to support, it kind of makes sense that the phone carriers would want to have some say in that process, because they're the first tier of support if something goes wrong. So that's an okay argument to hold. It is really hard to argue against that point of, we're the ones who have to support this, so we should get to test this. So
I would argue that should change too, though. I mean, if you look at how Apple's doing it, and I know, I'm sorry, but if you look at how Apple's doing it, if you have a problem with your iPhone, it doesn't matter who the carrier is. You go to the Apple store, because you know what? They're not going to be able to help you at Verizon and AT&T.
Well, but don't people still take it to their Verizon and AT&T stores?
Maybe, but I doubt they're getting anywhere.
I don't know, because I've never been an iPhone customer, but there's obviously way more Verizon stores than there are Apple stores. There's only one Apple store in the town where I live, and I bet there are dozens of Verizon stores. Maybe not dozens, but still a lot more. So I understand that argument. So it makes sense for the carriers to have some say somewhere in the update pipeline. And Microsoft just really hasn't clarified where that's going to be. When I look at what they're saying, it really doesn't sound all that different than the things they've said in the past. This is not the first time Microsoft has told us that they're going to be in charge of the update process. When you get an update on your phone, when you got an update on your phone, when it was Windows Phone 8, your updates, it was connecting to Microsoft servers. Therefore, you could make the statement, Windows Phone updates are coming from Microsoft, because they were, but that's not really what we're talking about here. And I'm not convinced that we're going to see a major change in how all of this works. I hope we do, but I'm not convinced that we're actually going to see it, because Microsoft just doesn't have that pull with the carriers that Apple does.
Well, that's disappointing. All right, well, let's talk about something cool. Last week, you know what I wanted to talk about? I wanted to talk about Snake hitting Windows Phone, one of the best apps that has been on so many different devices. You know what you did last week?
I scratched it. I removed it from the show notes.
Right.
Because I'm a jerk. And then tonight, I saw another article about it, and I thought, I have to give this game a try. I friggin' loved Snake back in the day. And the even earlier version of it, the Q Basic game in DOS called Nibbles, played the crap out of that game. And so I thought, all right, I got to try this on my Windows Phone. And, you know, the show notes for tonight might have suffered due to me playing Snake on my phone. Because Snake Rewind is really, really awesome. So I had to toss this in the notes here. It's interesting that they've made Snake into a game where where it actually has microtransactions in the game.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of controversy about that, actually.
Yeah, I understand why some people would be upset about that. Snake purist would probably be upset that, you know, that sort of thing doesn't belong in there. But, you know, I think just because of the love for Snake, it's hard to be upset. It's not horrible. You know, you just play the game some more, and it's not like you have to buy things to progress. You can just play more of it. And frankly, why wouldn't you want to just play more of it? It's so fun.
Yeah, it's like most in-app purchases. And I think it's the new economy. You just have to deal with it. This is how things work now. But I love that this has been revised for this platform and others as well. This is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's move on to some other Microsoft news. This might not have been the biggest Microsoft news of the last week or so, but I think it's the coolest news. So we talked about Skype Translator months ago when this first came out. But when it first came out, it was just a preview. You had to sign up and then hopefully get into it, and the languages were limited. And maybe it's been so long now that you don't even remember what Skype Translator is. It's really simple. You do a Skype video chat with somebody. It doesn't necessarily need to be video, I don't think. But, you know, you're talking, using your spoken language to have a Skype conversation with somebody, and they're speaking a different language than you. And in essentially real time, Skype is translating the conversation. So if I'm speaking to someone in South America who's speaking Spanish and I'm speaking English, I can continue to speak English, they speak Spanish, and we hear each other in our native languages. It's,
yeah, you don't hear each other, you hear translations,
right,
of what you're saying. It's essentially the babblefish, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it is. Yeah, I wouldn't hear the other person's voice in English. You hear the computer generated voice.
I'm not saying it's not cool. It's still crazy cool.
It's still really, really cool. And now anybody can download it for Windows 8.1, and they've expanded the languages. It now supports English, Spanish, Italian, and Mandarin. So I just think this is awesome. I haven't gotten a chance to try it. I can't think off the top of my head any, you know, native speakers of any of these other languages that it would be fun to try this with. But it, you know, if you have a use for this, this sounds life-changingly cool.
This is very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing where this technology goes. All right, Richard, that's it for all the news. Let's talk about what we've been watching and playing and consuming over the last week.
All right. Well, so I mentioned that I fixed my network problem, and that made me think that, you know what? Maybe my network problem is why I was having issues with doing Blu-ray backups. Guess what? My network problem is why I was having issues doing Blu-ray backups. So now, when I do my Blu-ray backups, using my movie's built-in capability to back up any disc that I insert to log it, turns out it works. I was having problems with that before. So this is great news. So I have kind of resumed this process, and I'm starting to catch up on getting some of the more recent movies that I purchased into my movies library. So that's good news. Love that.
How many more do you have to rip?
Oh, I don't even want to go down that. Yeah. And I'm starting to think, should I re-rip my DVDs? Because the DVD backups that I have, for the most part, have been through older software, went through some compression, because this was the days when storage was expensive, and I wanted to have some sort of, you know, smaller version of the DVD. So yeah, this is going to be a long ongoing process. Now that's what's going on in my family room. In my office, I had mentioned that I've set up a bunch of stuff, including my old Xbox and Apple TV and stuff like that. Well, I've been using my old Harmony to control this stuff. And that's great because it doesn't require line of sight. But one of the things that it doesn't do, which the new Harmonies do, is it doesn't allow me to control devices over Wi-Fi. And so that means that while I managed to figure out how to get my Sonos system to kick in and be the output for the audio when I play anything on the TV in my office, what I can't do is adjust that volume.
Oh.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that was bugging me. So I've been toying with the idea of getting a new Harmony remote, because the new Harmonies allow you to do that. But I couldn't decide if it was, you know, a $100 problem or not. Well, this weekend I decided it was a $100 problem. This weekend I decided I needed to fix this because it was making me crazy. I was watching something where the volume was changing. I couldn't adjust the volume easily without having to switch apps and go to the Sonos app to change the volume for the Sonos speakers. So now I have the new controller for Harmony for my office. I haven't set it up yet, but I'm pretty excited about it because I think this is going to be the perfect solution to managing things in my office here.
Very cool.
I already mentioned that I bought a Lumia to do some testing. And the Lumia that I bought, you said I wouldn't know the number. I know the number. It is admittedly hard.
You just bought it. That's the only reason you still know it.
Yeah. It's the 635. And the reason that I bought it is that it was on sale at Best Buy this weekend for $49.
Holy cow.
Right. So this is so much faster than my 520. It's ridiculous. And my primary reason for wanting to have it is just to be able to test different apps on it and use it for a disconnected environment. And what I'm by disconnected, I mean, I'm not going to be hooked up to a provider, but I am going to be using it over a network and stuff like that. So it works great for that.
Cool. You're going to put Windows 10 on it?
When the time comes.
All right.
Not immediately. All right, so let's move to TV. So I've been watching a little bit of TV, trying to catch up on stuff, trying to catch some season endings. I was traveling and I got a little bit behind. So Nashville ended. Interesting cliffhanger there. Didn't expect quite the kind of cliffhanger that they provided. But, you know, why don't I, right? Because let's be honest, it's a soap opera. And The Amazing Race ended. And I am really happy with how that ended. I thought this was a good season after a couple of really boring seasons. So that was fun. And Arrow ended. And man, I think Arrow this season was just amazing. And I think they did a great job with their finale. This week is the Flash finale. I'm actually planning on watching it immediately after we finish recording here. So I'm looking forward to that too. And those two shows are just doing great. And there's a third show that's going to be joining those two on the CW in the same, hard to say the same universe, but of the same DC genre. So that's really good. I think they've done a great job there and I've really been enjoying it.
Cool.
And finally, I think it is my turn to talk about a podcast that I've been listening to. And one of my absolute favorite podcasts, to the point that I've supported it pretty heavily on Kickstarter, is a show called 99% Invisible. This is a public radio show that has had a lot of success through podcasting. And it is essentially about the 1% of the world around you that is created through design. And for the most part, you don't even notice it. It's just there. And so they talk about things that you just take for granted, things that are either architecturally or graphically or for some reason physically important in a way that you might not have ever considered. The most recent episode I listened to talked about how pool halls, like places where 100 years ago you would go and gather.
I still like to frequent pool halls.
All right. Well, for the most part, pool halls are all but extinct.
Yep.
100 years ago, they were huge, huge, big deal. And pool balls, for the longest time, were made out of ivory. It was the perfect substance to make pool balls out of. And they went through a lot of different iterations trying to find ways that they could come up with similarly good, can't think of a better word there, sorry, pool balls, good material for pool balls. And one of the things that they experimented with was something called plastics. Now, imagine, if you will, that our life didn't have plastic in it. And for the most part, it turns out that we can credit the investigation and looking at better ways of replacing ivory for pool balls as the genesis for having plastic in our lives. Amazing. Wow. I mean, the kind of things that they dive into are just really, really interesting. I love this show. I learn something every single week, and I'm very excited to share this with listeners. I hope if they're interested in kind of the nuance of what's behind a lot of the stuff in our lives, this is something that they'd be really interested in. Again, called 99% Invisible and is part of the Public Radio Exchange.
Cool. All right. Well, for me, I had mentioned last week that I was nearing the end of the first season of Halt and Catch Fire. I finished it late last week, and I got to say, it was just okay. I got to the season finale, and I said that if the season finale didn't rock me, probably wouldn't watch season two. I'm probably not going to watch season two. There's, you know, I've been thinking about other shows that I want to watch, and even I was listening to a show today, and they mentioned Battlestar Galactica, and I thought, be kind of fun to go back and rewatch Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
That's like 100 episodes. So, yeah, I'm not sure about that. There's a lot of other stuff to be watching, like The Americans. So I started watching The Americans season 3. Still love that show. Still such a great show. If you love Cold War espionage, and can handle the grittiness of AMC shows. It is so good. It is so good. And the first two seasons are on Amazon Prime Video. They might be on Netflix, but I'm not sure. But season three has just wrapped up on TV, so they're not on the streaming services just yet. But American season three, awesome. Loving it. Also, I'm the gamer on the show. This isn't going to surprise anybody. The game that I spent what little time I could find for gaming over the last week was, of course, Project Cars. This game is exactly the kind of racing game I want. It is so hardcore slash simulation. You know, it's not like, you know, Forza is a good game. Forza is a lot of fun. It's got realistic driving physics, but it's still a game, and it's very much a game where you go to do a race and they just plop you down at the back of the pack, and you've got three laps to pass 12 cars. And that's just not realistic racing. It leads to unrealistic driving. In Project Cars, you get to a race weekend, there's a practice session, there's a qualifying session, and then a race session. All of that is phenomenal. That's what I want to do. I want to practice for the race, then qualify for it so that I can hopefully start near the front and then race. It's awesome. The weather conditions are awesome. Like, yeah, I did a qualifying session and it started out raining. And then in the middle of the session, it stopped raining. So if you had a lap time set, you might want to go back out and set another one because now you're going to be able to go faster. Like, it's just really, really cool. The only problem with Project Cars is there's still a fair number of bugs, especially on the audio side where, like, I got a notification that a friend popped online and all of a sudden the audio in the game started skipping for like 15 seconds. Or sometimes you'll go to start a session, you know, a race or a qualifier or whatever, and it just won't have any audio at all. And you'll have to drop out of the session and come back. So it's got some bugs. Hopefully it's going to get patched soon because I am really, really enjoying it. So that's Project Cars. That's probably going to be what I'm playing for a while at this point. Well, that's going to do it for this week. So if you'd like to get a hold of us for next week, you can do that in a bunch of different ways. We're on Twitter. Richard's account is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook at Facebook.com/TheDMZ. We're on Google Plus. You can email us at entertainment20@TheDigitalMediaZone.com. You can also check out some of our other podcasts like The End User and Home On, which, by the way, The End User supposed to have a show last week, and then right as they were about to record, Taylor's laptop stopped working. Taylor's got a new laptop, so hopefully they'll be back this week. It's hard to podcast without a computer.
I wonder if he bought a Mac.
I'm sure he did to replace his five-year-old MacBook. He probably got a new Mac of some sort. I'm sure we'll find out on the next episode of The End User. The other show we've got here at the DMZ is Richard's other show. It's called Home On. They cover the latest home automation and control news. And what's going on with the latest Home On?
So up next, we're going to have Seth Johnson from the Home Tech Podcast joining me. Man, this is a dangerous episode. Every time I get together with Seth and Jason from Home Tech, we could just talk on and on and on and on. I am going to try my best to get this out on time for the start of next week, which would be Tuesday, the day after the holiday in the U.S. I can't guarantee that because there's a lot of editing because we talked for practically an hour and a quarter. And yeah, I need to edit that down. So Seth joined me. We talked about Lightfare, me talking about lighting, going on and on. Imagine that.
Wow, I never would have expected that.
And we talked about a bunch of other stuff going on in this space. So should be a good episode. I'm really looking forward to getting that out there. And following that, I am still trying to confirm this, but I'm expecting that we're going to be talking with Rahul Raj, the marketing guy from Ecobee. He's someone that we talked to when we were at Pepcom earlier this year during CES 2015.
Very cool. As usual, I'll be looking forward to that. And if you'd like to participate with this show in real time, you can do that because we record this show live. We're usually on Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Sometimes it's not at 8. Sometimes it's not on Tuesdays. So your best bet is to follow us on Twitter because we always try to tweet when the show will actually be on, and then you can jump in the chat room and talk with us as we're recording the show live. It's a lot of fun for us, and we think it's probably a lot of fun for you too. But that's going to do it for episode 329. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next week for episode 330. Until then, adios.
Bye.